right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we've got a kind of an old school classic Piecing It Together episode. We got our buddy Chad Clinton Freeman back on the show. Of course, he was the very first co-host and probably been on the show more than anybody, I'd imagine. I'd have to add it all up, but always glad to have Chad here. And we are talking about one of Chad's favorite things to talk about, Shia LaBeouf and his new film, Honey Boy. Honey Boy is a very strange, unique autobiographical film that Shia LaBeouf wrote about his own experience as a child actor and dealing with his father and the fallout of all that. And it's a great movie. It is still out in theaters, so I urge you to go see it. You know, indies like this don't get around too much, but it is playing and hopefully for another week or two. It's an Amazon original, so it'll be on Amazon Prime very soon, but definitely go seek this one out in the theater. It's definitely worth seeing. So before we get into it, I want to remind you all to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice. And of course, you can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. We'd love to hear what you're thinking of the show. So please come and rate and review us on whichever one of those you like to leave your reviews on. We would very much appreciate it, especially as we enter this new year. We want to keep making the show better for you guys. So you could also, of course, follow us on all the social medias at Piecing Podcast. Join the Facebook group Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. And that's enough things to remind you to do. I'm sure I'm going to remind you to do all of it again at the end of the episode. So, you know, I'd say we might as well get into this one because we've got a great conversation about Honey Boy coming up. So enjoy it. And thanks, as always, so much for listening. Today's episode is sponsored by the Golden Tiki. Recently named one of the top tiki bars in the United States by the Food Network, and also one of the top 10 best nightlife destinations in Las Vegas by USA Today. They've got great rum, mixed drinks, and of course the Dole Whip. They've got theme nights, DJs, all kinds of fun stuff, including Alan Budd's Oasis, who are two robotic parrots that put on a great show every hour on the hour. So next time you're in Las Vegas, make sure to check out the Golden Tiki on Spring Mountain. Back on the show with us today, we've got Chad Clinton Freeman. How's it going, Chad?
Yes, it's going good. I'm excited to be back on. Ready to talk about a favorite subject of mine.
So, yeah, twice in 1 year, you are getting to be on Piecing It Together talking about, seriously, one of your favorite subjects outside of Batman v Superman. we're talking about Shia LaBeouf. Yep. And his new film, Honey Boy. Something I've been asking a lot of people lately when they're on the show is, you know, when did this get on your radar? Is this something you've been looking forward to for a while?
Yeah, definitely. This was one of my, you know, most anticipated movies of the year. So it's one I've been excited for, you know, since the beginning of the year, basically.
Sure.
I mean, and before that, even when I first heard about the project of him doing a movie about himself playing his dad, I was sold right then. So
yeah, it's bizarre enough. You don't even have to be a fan of him specifically. You just have to hear that synopsis and just be like, oh, okay.
Right.
This sounds weird and cool.
Yeah.
I forget. Was this on your anticipated list?
Yeah, it was.
Did that episode? It was.
Yep,
yeah.
Okay. It sure was. Yep. Right. Yeah, on. It was in like the top three or four, I think. So yeah.
Okay. That and makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I think it was number three, because I think number one was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and then I think Kingsman, which didn't happen this year, but it's next year, and then this one. So I would say that this one, of the ones I mostly anticipated, is definitely by far my favorite one.
One out of three ain't bad. Well, right on. Let's get into this thing. This is a... It's a very interesting, strange kind of movie, I love what he did, and I love the year that Shia has been having. It was great talking about Peanut Butter Falcon a few months ago, and I really excited to see him doing such interesting stuff. And I think, I know we talked a little beforehand that we don't have a lot of puzzle pieces on this one. I think partially because it's such a unique film. But, you know, why don't we jump into whatever you got first? Because, you know, we'll talk more about the uniqueness and strangeness of the movie as we're going through puzzle pieces.
Right. Well, you know what? I mean, I'm going to jump into one of them that I think I was just, you know, because it is so unique of a movie with somebody playing somebody from their life and it's about their life. Mm. And the movie that came to mind for me was the Howard Stern movie, Private Parts, where, you know, at the time, you know, it was like something that nobody had ever done.
Sure.
Howard Stern played himself in a movie about himself. so I think that movie really was, you know, the film that kind of opened the door for people to even be like accepting to a movie like this. I think this year with Rocketman, you know, the fact that Elton John actually, you know, was part of the making of Rocketman, you
sure.
know, one of the big producers behind it. I think that really we're kind of seeing the echo effects of Private Parts all these years later. You know, it's more accepted and still this one's a little strange because, you know, I mean, he's playing his dad.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think Private Parts is one of those movies that I think everybody loved when it came out, even the critics, but it's one that's kind of, you know, been forgotten about a lot of
yeah.
ways. But I think in many ways, you know, it laid the foundation, you know, for a movie like this to happen.
Absolutely agree. And I'm surprised I didn't think of that when thinking about puzzle pieces, because I guess it's difficult to like really try to imagine who has played themselves or like
right.
some version of themselves,
right.
you know, who has the audacity to do that. And oh yeah, Howard right. Stern has the audacity to do that. but yeah, no, that's a great first puzzle piece to kick this thing off. And yeah, I mean, playing his own father is such an interesting idea. And I think Howard Stern himself, you know, aside from just, you know, documenting his whole rise to stardom and everything, I mean, I think it does act a little bit as his own little bit of self-therapy as well, which is, of course,
right.
of course, what Shia LaBeouf is doing here.
Right. Yeah. No, yeah, totally. And I mean, that's the other thing is that, I mean, with Private Parts, like I said, it worked. And strangely, somehow it worked.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't come off as self-indulgent. I mean, it actually came off as sincere. And I think this one as well, I mean, it's a very heartfelt movie. It comes off as sincere. It's not, you know, Shia doesn't play the victim card here.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't play the blame game, really. I mean, seriously, this to me was just... I mean, very much a almost like a love letter to his father. And from what I understand, his father actually is eating this up.
Yeah,
he loves this movie. He loves the fact that he's put out there in this way. And really, I mean, in doing a little looking about his dad, he really let him off easy. His dad is a way worse guy.
Somehow
than
I
the
figured
guy in the
that.
Movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, everything in the movie is true and more so. I mean, because that's the thing is like, I think the physical abuse was way worse.
Mm-hmm.
We only seen like one scene of that, I think, in the film. And that was an ongoing thing. And I think, you know, it does mention that his dad is a felon. His dad was a sex offender.
Mm-hmm.
And his dad basically physically assaulted a lot of people, including people on this like set of the Disney show, Even
Ooh,
Stevens.
Boy.
Yeah, so so yeah, but he really did grow a marijuana on the side of the road. So
awesome.
Everything in there is actually true, and I think it really is more of a loving portrayal though of his dad than trying to you know, blame his dad or trying to, like I said, play like the victim game.
And I think that probably has a lot to do with the, like the therapy and everything that he's going through right now. I mean, he's not trying to go at it from a negative point of view. He's trying to go at it in the positive and look at the positive aspects of that upbringing. And, so it makes a lot of sense in that respect. But right on. Yeah. And I'm really interested to dig into some articles after this. I was specifically waiting until we finish recording this, because I want to know more about the true story. And so it's going to be really interesting to dig into some of that. But I'll jump into my first puzzle piece. Mm-hmm. And, so it's weird, you know, in some ways I could almost say, that with the movie Birdman, first of all, the movie itself is very much skewering the, you know, the narcissism of these actor types and all that stuff. Yeah. But it, in some ways I look at it as both the Michael Keaton and the Edward Norton characters, both mm-hmm. being Shia LaBeouf here. But then I also look at it like each of them being separate aspects of both the Shia character and the dad character. You know, and so it's like you're almost getting two different levels of mixing up those two kinds of personalities, those two types of full of themselves insane actors, you know, and so, you know, Birdman, love it or hate it, you know, goes into that behind the scenes of Hollywood and just the total, I mean, I already used the word narcissistic, but that is the word to use, you know, the narcissism of these actors, and they're just total asshole tendencies and just the craziness, the of their life behind all of that and just everything that's going into all that. And so, I thought of Birdman for my first puzzle piece.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, definitely. Birdman is a good one. You know, I remember loving Birdman when it first came out, and I haven't actually revisited it since then. But I know you and Josh talked about it during the Herse Mell episode.
Yeah.
Which I loved Herse Mell. So, I mean, in a way, I guess you could kind of throw that one as a tag along with Birdman. But I would say this is one of those movies that is a lot like those two, in that it is more so than a movie. It's kind of just an experience in a way.
Sure.
It's which to me feels very documentary.
Mm-hmm.
It's throwing you into basically two different time periods at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting is that the director, of course, I believe all she's done prior to this is documentary work.
Right.
And I think that worked really well though. But yeah, definitely it's more about throwing you into the experience, this chaos, than a story per se.
And all credit due to that director, Alma Harrell, I believe her name is, for keeping this from going completely in the self-indulgent direction, which it easily could have done. But she kept this thing interesting and fun, and just, you know, despite all of the dysfunction on screen, she really kept this thing a great film. And yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of conversation right now about the Globes not nominating any women. I think she's first on the list this year as far as one that should have been.
Right. Yeah. Well, and the thing is as far as her specifically, what she brought to the story, it's interesting that the way this film is structured, evidently that was totally her. This was a linear story, and I don't even see how it would have played out linearly.
Right.
She's the one that said that, no, we've got to make this a non-linear story and flash back and forth between the two. I don't even know how you would have this as a linear film.
Right.
But that's part of the brilliance of it, of cutting back and forth between the two time periods. And you said fun, and that is a weird, again, that's what's so weird about this movie, is that I felt like this movie was fun. Mm-hmm. I felt like it was sweet,
yep,
even, and it's so like It's so weird to say those things about a movie that's basically about abuse.
Yeah, an abusive father-son relationship.
Yeah, yeah. So, no, it's such a bizarre movie. It really is.
It absolutely is. Well, what do you got for your next piece?
Well, I guess the kind of tag along onto that same kind of thought there. I was thinking, you know, this obviously made me think of other child actors and whatnot, like Macaulay Culkin and, you know, Corey Feldman, you know, people that obviously, you know, got really screwed up from their childhoods, and you wonder what they went through and how that you know, how it played out. And I think you kind of get an idea with this film. And one of the movies, though, that it reminded me of, it's different in a way, but similar. And that's I, Tonya, which, you know, Tonya Harding, she's somebody who came from, you know, just nothing but basically a world of abuse and total, you know, terrible parenting, of course it's almost like she became this weird product of it, and she became a great athlete, but at the same time a totally screwed up person. And the same thing with Shia, of how, you know, he really is this talented actor. He's done some great things in his, you know, his career so far, and I think he's gonna be doing even, you know, bigger and better, I think, especially after this year. Tonya Harding, you know, it was just that it's almost like she grew up in a world where abuse was all she knew, and that's all that she expected. And I think that's kind of, in a way, what you know, where Shia came from.
Sure.
And and that's, you know, his dad's an alcoholic, and then of course he became an alcoholic. His dad's had PTSD, and ends up passing that along to him. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of abuse works that way. It's in cycles with families, and this movie is about coming to this place to where you even realize that cycle's there.
Yeah,
and you learn forgiveness and try to figure out how to break that cycle.
Sure.
But I think I think Tonya Harding, in many ways, I think that's where she came from as well. And I think, you know, that movie I, Tonya, it shows a lot of that about, you know, a lot of people said that, you know, that movie, it felt almost like it was the, oh, poor Tonya's the victim. I never got that, but some people do. But this one, I think, is less so than even that, though. Because, again, I think in a lot of ways, things were toned down when they could have been, like, ramped up.
Sure.
So, anyways.
Yeah.
I, Tonya, a great movie. And again, dysfunctional family and, you know, abuse. And then also, you know, the molding somehow of this very talented person from that.
Sure. Yeah, and I think everything you're saying there, I absolutely agree. I thought about using I, Tonya as a puzzle piece, actually. I did not put it on my list, but I definitely thought about it also because of just the general tone of the movie. I mean, it just
it feels
like a companion piece. It really has that same that same level of dark comedy, same level of just, there's so much just sad abuse, but at the same time, it's funny. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, see, that's the thing, is that, like, I know we always joke about Shia, about you know, in his new movie, is he dirty? Is he greasy? Is he grimy? Is he filthy? And he always is, of course, because that's Shia. And that's the thing, is that I think this movie, though, in a lot of ways, is like overall a good representation of him, because he is like just dirty and just like, there's something, you know, filthy and greasy about him as a person. And there's something also very just smart ass about him.
Oh yeah.
Who there's a scene in here that I felt hit Shia perfectly on the head. It was a scene where the therapist told Otis, which is the, you know, the name of the character in the movie.
Yeah, the stand-in for Shia LaBeouf.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. He tells Otis to go out into the woods and to basically scream and yell, you know, to get up all this, you know, anger and hostility out of him.
Yeah.
And he does that. And then he comes back and he basically, you know, hey, I want to thank you for telling me to do that. And the guy's like, I don't know if you're like being serious or what's going on here. And then there's a weird moment of like Otis like gets pissed off and then leaves and slams the door. And I'm just like, that whole thing, that to me, that summed up Shia LaBeouf perfectly.
Yeah,
that just moment there. And then also just the whole, just like the weird like dirtiness of this whole movie as well.
Yeah,
I mean, in a lot of ways it just captures his spirit.
Speaking of that dirtiness, the fact that, you know, they live across the street from, you know, the prostitutes and
right.
the girl basically, you know, is, you know, it's basically assault. I mean,
right,
you know,
but
I don't think anybody's complaining about that though, the way they complained about mid-90s, last year, you know?
Right. Well, they left it more open-ended with this anyway.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, that stuff, yeah. So I remember the first scene with them too, and he pulls out the money.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like I don't know. It was that moment just hit me so weird.
Yeah,
because I mean, here's the thing: is that you've got this kid who totally he's not a kid at all. I mean, he's the parental figure in the relationship
totally.
With the dad.
Totally.
And then here he is basically buying people to be his friend in a way. It's just like, I mean, it's very just like heartbreaking on one level. And at the same time, it's just like, I don't know. It's just like, I remember that first scene with him and the girl and he pulls out the money. I was just like, but yeah.
Well, I'm going to go for another piece, and you mentioned PTSD while you were talking about that last one, and so I was trying to think of a movie, and I feel like the piece that I'm about to bring up, there's probably a much better one that would fit a little bit better, but I was trying to think of a movie that dealt with a form of PTSD that is not war-related. That is, you know, comes from...
I think I know what movie you're going to say, because I think it's on my list.
I wonder if it is, but the one I'm going to bring up is Short Term 12. Is that it?
Nope, not the one.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, another great movie filled with great young actors. Of course, Brie Larson and so many other people, Lakeith Stanfield. But yeah, you know, it's just a movie that deals with just, you know, these kids who've just been through so much and, you know, they're trying their best, you know, to get help and to, you know, to get the help they need and to grow. And, you know, Otis, you know, he really is trying to get better, you know, after this, after this ridiculous upbringing that's like hard to even imagine from an outsider.
Right.
Yeah. What's the one that you have?
I was thinking Whiplash.
Oh, okay. All right. That's actually, that makes sense. Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's a movie about abuse in some regards. I mean, and, you know, about pressure on somebody, you know, that just should not be there.
Sure.
And it's a strange, though, kind of almost, not really loving abuse, but I mean, almost kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of almost the same thing as like the Tonya Harding thing or like Michael Jackson even.
Mm-hmm.
I thought for sure you were going to say Whiplash, which is funny because where I even came to Whiplash was Miles Teller. He's one that I'm a fan of as well quite a bit. And the movie he did, which is the war, PTSD movie, Thank You for Your Service. It's very much structured a lot like this film. The way it cuts back and forth from, you see the after effect of the broken person. And then you see the, you know, the trauma unfold. And it cuts back and forth in between those. So I think structurally it's a lot like, thank you for your service. And then, I thought of Miles Teller. I was like, Whiplash. I was like,
yeah, right.
You know, what's his name? Who's the guy in that? The guy that's always angry screaming.
Oh, J.K. Simmons.
Yeah. There we go. So, it's a lot different. But at the same time, there is some similarities in regards to the thing is it's actually pretty amazing that Shia became the great actor he is, because his dad wasn't really pushing him to be like the best he could be or anything, like the character's being pushed in Whiplash. Mm-hmm. He's just basically pushing him. It's like, sure. You know what I mean? The only time he's even pushing him acting wise, it's like because he wants him to do something like totally, you know, silly and obscure that he wants him to do.
Yeah.
Like the scene with the flare your nostrils more. And I'm not going to go to bed until you're not going to go to bed until you make me laugh. And
yeah.
Just like, anyway, his dad's basically just totally ape shit. that's basically what I took from the movie.
Sure.
But, I think more so than the pressure from his dad, I think he just somehow decided at a very early age that he was going to do something. Because here's the thing: some of the stuff that they didn't go into with the movie that I find interesting that I was actually surprised was not covered in some way. But when Shia was actually 4 years old, him and his family had a hot dog stand, and they would go around, and evidently Shia wanted to be a comedian, and he would just like basically entertain audiences and try to get them to buy their hot dogs.
Huh.
And then they went bankrupt with this business. And then Shia like became a stand-up comedian at like 4 or 5 years old or
wow.
Something crazy. Yeah. Yeah. And even he got his first, job. I don't know if it was the Disney job or what it was, but he basically called a prank phone call at like 10 years old or something, and was saying that he was the agent of Shia and was giving like a phony British accent, and oh, you've got to meet this kid, and it was him doing it.
Wasn't there a movie where somebody did that? I'm trying to remember. That seems so
know.
Familiar.
There might be, but anyway, this supposedly happened. So
I should do that with this podcast. I should interview famous directors, but it's just me doing the other voice.
So there's all kinds of just crazy wackiness, like from the get go of this. You know, kid.
Yeah. But
anyway, so
we could get a Honey Boy prequel with more stories.
Right.
Well, all right. So we got two Miles Teller for the price of one there. I like that.
Right.
Well, I will go to another piece then. So, you know, continuing on the same kind of path that we're on here, I thought of the Royal Tenenbaum. And just the coming to the realization of what a piece of shit your father is, you know what I mean?
Right.
And just the damage that he's done, and never having really like put two and two together until this moment. It's like, you know, just finally having that realization. And
right.
So that's what I thought of that. And, you know, of course, Shia plays a great version of his own father. I can only assume. I mean, certainly the performance is great. And I mean, there's few better dirtbag dads in movie history than Gene Hackman,
right?
In the Royal Tenenbaum. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it makes me wonder, cause you know, how Shia evidently lied to his dad and told him Mel Gibson was going to play him in the movie.
I forgot about that. That rules.
Which, which, I mean, it kind of makes me want to see the version that Mel Gibson was the dad.
Oh, my God,
but,
yeah.
Maybe they do a sequel with Mel Gibson as the dad and Shia plays himself.
Oh, my God. Now that is a movie I want to see. Wow. Oh man. Well, what do you got up next?
Well, I got one I actually thought of I actually rewatched because it is on Prime Video. And that's another woman director film. It was Asia Argento. I think it's the only film she's directed. I think she did direct another one. But The Heart is Deceitful Above All Things, which is a very, very just like heartbreaking, devastating movie about childhood abuse. It's just basically it's like a very, very dark, bleak movie. It's really well done though, and it's got a lot of interesting cameos that I didn't remember. Like, I mean, Marilyn Manson's in it, and Jeremy Renner's in it. There's like all these people pop out. I'm like, I don't even remember them being in it. But it's a mother and son relationship, and it's almost like the mother, she had the son at a young age, and then the kid got taken away, went into the foster care system, and actually ended up with some decent families. But for whatever reason, she decides she wants to get the kid back when she's 23. And it's almost like she makes it her life, you know, ambition to make this kid's life hell. Huh. It's a very, very, it was a movie that was supposed to be a true story that ended up being, I guess, the book that it's based off of was actually, it came out later that it was a fabrication.
Oh, wow.
That it is not, you know, for real. But it's a good movie. It's a hard movie to watch though, because it's just a very dark and devastating, and anything you can imagine possible happening to a kid basically happened to this boy. There's still just that weird relationship at times that one of, you know, when you're a kid, when it's your parent, I mean, even if your parent is totally fucked up, you know, it's like, that's your parent.
Yeah. You, you look at them and you're like, that's my parent. That's
exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, in this one, at least he's like, you know, there's a realization that Otis has, you know, when they're in the motel, like, hey, Dad, I kind of want you to be a dad.
Yeah.
You know, I'm paying you to be here, you know, and it's just like, but I couldn't think of too many movies to where had like this like darkness to them, but that one definitely is, and is even a lot darker, and it doesn't have the, like we said, like the, you know, the fun, the like, you know, dark comedy side that this one does.
Right. Just straight bleak.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it sounds very, very dark. And, you know, speaking of like really, really dark movies, my next puzzle piece is the David Spade movie, Dickie Roberts, Former Child Star.
I never saw that movie, actually.
It's terrible, but I watched it once, very, very drunk, probably stoned too, and I don't remember much about it. But I mean, come on, it's about a former child star and the fucked up life he lived. So I mean,
right.
You know, it had to have at least come up in the minds at one point while they're making this thing. I do not remember it being very good, though. We'll just leave it at that,
right?
I do love David Spade though.
I've never been into David Spade at all. So I think that's why I pretty much skipped that one altogether.
I think you're not missing much.
So this isn't a puzzle piece that I should take back and be like, I've got to seek this movie out. What is it streaming on?
I think you will be forgiven if you skip this one. Let's put it that way. But I do think it's a good cautionary tale for young Noah Jupe to watch this and make sure that things don't go that direction. So what do you got for your next piece?
Well, also along the same lines, because one of the well, not the one you just mentioned, but The Heart is Deceitful Above All Things. Along the same lines of it, I was thinking of the dirtiness of this movie, the underbelly of childhood. Mm-hmm. And I thought of Harmony Korine, and especially I have to believe it was his first movie, Gummo, which is actually it's a movie that's not really a movie. It's not necessarily a story. It's more of a experience in a way, kind of like this one.
Sure.
But there's some really weirdness in that film, but there's also some like very sweet moments as well. There's a moment where the main character, he's taking a bath, and I think his mom's washing his hair, and then she feeds him a plate of spaghetti while he's in the bathtub. And it's such a weird but also sweet moment.
I just love I love that you're describing Gummo as sweet right now. That's got to be first.
That moment is sweet. There are some sweet things about that film.
Yeah.
It's the same way that strangely this movie has some moments in it. I mean, the moment when he takes Otis to the freeway to see the marijuana growing.
Mm-hmm.
And there was just some weird sweet moment between them that of course is the climax of the movie, but it's just bizarre, how the dark underbellyhood of childhood, there still is some innocence and just some sweetness. That's
sure.
All, so.
No, absolutely. I could totally see that. And it's funny, I'm not sure yet if we're going to do an episode on the movie Waves, but I saw that the day after I saw Honey Boy. And I was thinking of just Harmony Korine in general as a puzzle piece for that movie. And I also did think about him in general with this movie as well. I think you're absolutely right. Just showing that strange world, what I mean? It's just so, just so awful, but at the same time just fascinating,
right? Yeah, fascinating. That's definitely a good word to explain. And Harmony Korine, most of his movies aren't really movies, they're kind of experiences, in that almost John Waters kind of way,
sure. So. Absolutely. Well, I only have one more piece, and for my last piece, I know I bring it up a lot. No, I'm not bringing up Evil Dead. It's another one I bring up a lot, though. Adaptation in Synecdoche, New York, both from Charlie Kaufman. Both very strange movies in which he basically writes himself into the story, especially Adaptation, but then the character writes himself into his own story in Synecdoche, New York. But just this exploration of these narcissistic, self-obsessed, people. And I mean, of course, Shia LaBeouf did this with great intention, and with the real intention of delving into himself. But I mean, it is pretty freaking weird to write a movie about yourself. And then I know I did read that he said that he never intended to star in it. I don't know if that's true or not, but he certainly ended up there starring as his own father. That is so strange,
I'd heard that too. That evidently, I was told I believe it was the director, actually pushed him into playing the dad, mm-hmm. saying that would help with his this healing process that he was going through.
Right.
That if he really wanted to understand and empathize with his dad, that he would actually play the role. And from what I understand, originally, he had no intention of writing this and actually doing anything with it. He wrote it and it was not a movie. And then
it's probably more of an exercise or something.
Yeah. And then it kind of became more into a movie. And then I think, the director, I think, I don't know how she even got involved, but I think a lot of it, the movie had to do with her as much as Shia, as far as actually pushing it along. I think if there wasn't somebody that championed it and said, "Hey, this is pretty pretty great. We can do something with this.
Yeah.
Then it would not have, you know, ended up happening. Because here's the thing. This thing happened fast. Because whenever, you know, a lot of things are, the timeline's kind of screwy in the movie, but the incident that sends him into rehab, that he ends up, you know, writing this, was when he was filming The Peanut Butter Falcon.
Right.
Which was in 2017. And so, you know, here it is 2019, Peanut Butter Falcon came out and this movie came out. So this movie, you know, it got made fast.
It sure did. Yeah, absolutely. That is crazy. I had read that about that was during Peanut Butter Falcon. That's wild.
Yeah.
It's really wild.
Yeah. Which is also weird, because how Peanut Butter Falcon works is very much a companion to this film, because Peanut Butter Falcon's a lot about his character forgiving himself.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
And then this one is about, you know, forgiving somebody else. I think they work really well together.
Yeah.
I mean, I think because he's in a lot of interviews I've seen him do, he's talking about how making Peanut Butter Falcon, you know, it changed him in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, along with him getting arrested and then going to rehab, and then I just think a lot of things like happened all at once, that almost like, you know, it's like when things in life happen and like this magic happens.
Sure.
And that's kind of all of this kind of happened at once, and then, you know, you got these two great movies in one year now.
And let the record state that Chad was in his corner the whole time.
Well, that being said, I will say this, because I never knew like the young Shia stuff. Like, I'm watching Even Stevens now on Disney Plus for the first time, and he's great as a kid. He is.
Wow.
I mean, I got on the Shia bandwagon pretty late, I be honest.
I mean,
American Honey, I think, was the first time where I was like, wait, this guy's pretty great. But I've loved basically everything I've seen.
Oh, since. All right. Then I'm on the same wavelength as you. That's when I started to like him too.
I went back and was like, oh yeah, you know what, why would people rag on, you know, the Raiders movie that he's in?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think everything that I've seen him in, I think he's pretty great.
Yeah, I'm not gonna join you with that one. But do you have any other puzzle pieces?
Well, it's funny, because I thought you were going to mention the Florida Project, because, you know, I just mentioned American Honey. I think a lot of this movie you can kind of see in a lot of Shia's movies that he's done before, like mm-hmm. American Honey.
Sure.
You know, and this one was almost like the, you know, the Florida Project was like the movie to where, like, innocence can still thrive even mm-hmm. when everything else is bleak, and this is kind of almost the opposite in a way.
Yeah.
but the whole living in a motel aspect.
Sure. Sure.
And then you know, just with American Honey, which I remember when the Florida Project came out, you said it was almost like the kindergarten version of American Honey,
right?
Something, yeah. Like, and it is pretty much just that, the whole like almost like not a care in the world, like freedom.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I think that's kind of how Shia's whole life has been. Is almost just this like not necessarily freedom, almost like a free fall, really.
Sure.
Like,
that's a different kind of freedom, but it is a freedom.
Exactly, but it is a freedom. So yeah, and then you know, at the same time, I mentioned Peanut Butter Falcon, but Man Down is a good Shia movie, where he actually plays somebody that has PTSD from war.
Mm.
And I just found that it was interesting, the roles that he had picked prior to this, and he had no idea that he had PTSD from his childhood or anything, but it's just that the roles that he was you know, drawn to, one of them was a PTSD movie, and of course the Borg versus McEnroe film, which again kind of goes back to I, Tonya in a way of this person who's just you know, the under the enormous amount of pressure to be the best they can from basically overbearing and, you know, abusive people, like the whole Whiplash thing.
Where does Nymphomaniac fit into it all? That's what I want to know.
Well, I think that fits in with the prostitutes across the way.
You did it. You did it.
So
right on. I will go ahead and do the finished puzzle, and then we will get into some closing thoughts on Honey Boy.
Okay.
So finished puzzle includes Private Parts, Birdman, Her Smell, I, Tonya, Short Term 12, Whiplash, Thank You for Your Service, The Royal Tenenbaums, The Heart is a Deceitful Above All Things, Dickie Roberts, Former Child Star, Gummo, Synecdoche, New York, An Adaptation, The Florida Project, American Honey, Man Down, Borg vs. McEnroe, and I guess we might as well throw a Nymphomaniac in there while we're at it. All the Shia movies. I really, really enjoyed this movie. When I first got out of it, I was like, okay, I love the audacity of what he did here. And I love the performances. And I like a lot of the movie. It kind of, the end started to rub me the wrong way a little bit. I felt it kind of got a little bit into kind of melodrama, schmaltzy a little bit with the dad and stuff at the very end. The more I think about it, the more I think that I'm happy that it wrapped up that way. And that it, you know, it really kind of delivered a happy ending after all that, you know, dysfunction.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I think that's like the whole point of it anyway, is it's just, you know, forgiving, you know, basically people, you know, that didn't do what they were supposed to do or screwed you up.
Sure.
Especially, you know, the scars from your childhood that you have.
Yeah.
I think his lesson here, his takeaway is that, you know, he realizes that basically his dad was screwed up, and at the same time, I think his dad, or at least he feels his dad did as best he could with, you know, who he was and where he was in his life.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think he's, you know, forgiving the pain that his dad inflicted on him.
Yeah.
You know, it just, you know, taking the love away from, you know, the hurt, basically, and
sure,
and just embracing the love as opposed to focusing on the hurt and letting that fester. Because from what I understand is that he had not talked to his dad for like 7 years, and this movie, him writing it, is what led to him actually speaking to his dad. Of course, he talked to his dad and said, "Hey, I'm going to make this movie, and Mel Gibson's going to play it." He should have put that in the movie too. You know, there's the part when he goes to see the dad, which is so done in a very weird, surreal way, and the dad's dressed as a clown.
Yeah,
and he's still at the motel. He should have told him, "Hey, Mel Gibson's going to play you." That just would have been.
What if for just that scene, Mel Gibson was playing him? No, that would have been sweet.
Right. I would have lost it. I would have lost it. I would have.
that's like an Easter egg for the fans. One other thing I just wanted to mention, we didn't quite talk about Lucas Hedges much, but I mean, man, just great performance after great performance, this kid. I mean, everything he's in, he's so damn good. And he's so good in this. He really is.
Yeah, we were talking about him before we were recording.
Yeah.
And then once we started recording, we didn't mention him.
Yeah.
his career, man, the movies he's been involved with I mean, just in the past like 3 years, it's amazing the great movies and every film that he's in, even if he's just in it for a little bit, he gives a great performance. I mean, him and the little kid in this, I mean, they're perfect.
Oh yeah,
they I mean, it really does feel like it's the same person, and it does like. They play Shia. I mean,
yeah.
They do.
Yeah, they do a great job, the two of them, and it just seamless transitioning between
right.
the two. Yeah, absolutely. I can't say enough good about the two of them. Right on. I think that about does it for right. Honey Boy. Do you have something else you saw recently you'd like to recommend?
Yeah, actually I do. Well, what I was going to say before that though is actually. I'm really excited about the David Ayer's next movie, which Shy is in, called The Tax Collector.
Oh, I haven't even heard of that yet.
Okay, that's the one where, like, you may have seen photos of Shia. He's, like, all tatted up,
uh-huh.
like, you know, almost like Jared Leto as Joker. I mean, hey, I don't know a whole lot about it. I've just seen some pictures, and I know it's Shia and David Ayer, so I'm like, yes. So, The Tax Collector, I think like some of the schedules I've seen have had it like coming out this year, I think. So maybe it's going to be next year or sometime. I don't know.
Okay.
But, yeah. But yeah, as far as movies, I seen lately, and this one goes along with this one perfectly. And I wasn't even thinking this, but, Light of My Life, which I just watched that last night. It's on Prime Video. And I know you weren't real big on it, but I love that movie. I thought it was so fantastic. It's one of my favorite movies this year.
Right on.
And the fact that it is a good, positive relationship of a father and child.
Sure.
Of course, it's the daughter. It's almost like the anti of this movie.
Totally.
Way.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, I just thought that was just like the perfect one to mention.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I couldn't believe how much I liked that movie. I just thought it was so, so good. And I just, as an extra puzzle piece, I will say that The Road is a puzzle piece, for Light of My Life.
Awesome. Yeah, we never got to do an episode, but no, I did like that movie quite a bit. I just maybe didn't love it as much as I was hoping for or as much as you did,
right.
But I definitely liked it a lot, though. I definitely think people should check it out.
And you know, and Casey Affleck, he's one of those kind of like Shia too that he keeps things interesting. I'll say that.
Sure.
And I think a lot of people, you know, don't like him. I think a lot like Shia. I think, to me, I think that movie, if anybody has any issues with, Casey Affleck and thinks he's a scumbag or whatever, they watch that movie. I think, you know, it's got a lot of heart. It's a really caring movie. I was totally blown away.
Awesome. Well, Chad, you got anything you'd like to plug before we let you go?
No, I think that's about it.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, it's good. It's good to have you back on the show. It's been a little while since your last time, but wait, was the Peanut Butter Falcon the last one you were on?
That either that or Joker. I don't
yeah,
remember.
One of those two.
But it's funny because I saw when you saw Honey Boy, you checked in. You said something like Joker 2.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing, though. It's funny because
it's
was
an
thinking
origin
about,
story.
I was thinking about Joaquin. This year, in many ways, is the year of performance artists, I think. Because I think Joaquin is a performance artist,
mm-hmm.
and I think Shia LaBeouf is a performance artist as well. And the big difference, though, what I see Joaquin as Joaquin, he'll take any like lie and make you think that it's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he's so good at the stuff that he does. Like, you know, all these wacky antics on talk shows and interviews he does. He never remembers anything that he says because he's just saying whatever comes to his mind, and whatever that lie is at that moment that he says, he can make you believe it.
Right,
and that's why
right.
he's a great actor. Now, Shia, I think, on the other hand, I think he speaks the truth of whatever moment he's in. Now, that truth may change in the next 5 minutes, but in that 5 minutes, that is the truth. And so I think they're both great performance artists, those in a totally different way. But this is the year of obviously Joaquin and Shia, the performance artists. So
right on. I love it. Well, thanks, Chad, and we will get you back again soon, man.
All right. Looking forward to it.
We interrupt your regularly scheduled podcast to bring you an exciting announcement.
You love movies and TV. We know you do because you're spending your precious time listening to this awesome podcast.
And if you love this podcast, we've got another we think you might like.
I'm Shannon.
And I'm Phaedra.
And we are Stinger, the entertainment podcast.
We're two fangirls who love TV and movies just like you, and every 2 weeks we discuss what we're watching, from Netflix to Hulu to Amazon to network TV, movies we've seen, and what's coming up next in entertainment.
We hear so many people ask, what should I binge watch next? Or is that movie really worth seeing in the theater? If you have those questions, we're here for you.
And you can decide which one of us is right.
So check us out on your favorite podcast app, or you can listen on our website, stingerpodcast.com. Just search for Stinger Podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Or connect with us on social media. We're Stinger Podcast everywhere.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Honey Boy with our buddy Chad Clinton Freeman. If you're enjoying Piecing It Together, we would love to hear from you. You can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or on Podchaser, or you could always just get in touch with me. You could either get in touch with me on social media at Piecing Pod, or join the Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, a movie discussion group, or just email me. My email address is bydavidrosen@gmail.com, or you could also find a contact form on our website, piecingpod.com. So, you know, I would love to hear what you guys are thinking of the show. We're going into a whole new year, and then March will be the beginning of a new year for the show. It'll be the beginning of year three. So we want to keep making the show better for you. So we really appreciate everybody that's been out there listening and all the great feedback we've gotten over these last couple years. But if you've been listening and you've had some thoughts and maybe you never did get in touch with us to let us know what you think, now's the time, because we're going to start making a few little changes here, some tweaks, and you know, lots of stuff planned for the new year. So get in touch. We'd love to hear from you. And also, if you'd like to be on an episode of Piecing It Together, we're always looking for new co-hosts. So absolutely get in touch. So why don't we close this thing out with a piece of music, as we always do. You know what? This is a kind of an odd track in my discography of my albums. I've always loved this track, but it's kind of strange. And so I think it would be a good fit for something like Honey Boy, because it's a strange story, a strange movie. So this is a unique opportunity to play a track like this. This is called Out of Everything. It's from my third album, Head Like Fire. And it's kind of a meshing of lots of different styles, just kind of thrown together and turned into something just weird and explosive. And yeah, hopefully you enjoy it. So this is Out of Everything from Head Like Fire, and we'll be back with more Piecing It Together, including some of these special end of the decade episodes coming up real soon.
and all points west.